very much for coming out. Let's just get it started. Coming to the stage, Joey Coco Diaz.
What's happening? You bad motherfuckers. Happy Thanksgiving. Thank you very much for coming out. You know what I'm saying? I'm happy there was no traffic tonight. I was fucking pissed off. I'll run over a protester. I don't give a fuck. You know what I mean? I'll hit a fucking protester. If it's between me seeing you guys, I'm hitting that motherfucker. I'll take that cocksucker right down. Fuck you protesting. Stay home. Write a note. Listen to black music. You know what I'm saying? You're gonna fucking protest. Get the fuck out of here. Get the memo. There's no future in protesting. There's no fucking future. You go out like an idiot. What? What the fuck? I'm gonna get dressed to go out and get pepper sprayed. That's a great fucking career. We'll get pepper sprayed and kicked in the stomach so I can tell people, get the fuck out of here, all right? Even a hooker got a purpose, you know what I'm saying? She gets a cum shot to her face, she's getting $50. What, are you gonna walk around and get pepper sprayed for free, you fucking dummy? Fucking pepper spray like a fucking idiot and shit. Those are the same. Don't these people fucking do anything? Who finds time? Like, you know what? Fuck the gym. Let's go down there and protest for Ferguson. Now listen, man, it's fucked up, you know. There's nothing we could do. But me getting on the 10, stopping good people from going to work, I'm going to do fucking nothing, all right? Stay home. That's it. Listen to Al Green, now you know. Next time, pull a gun. What the fuck do you know about being a cop? What the fuck do you know about a fucking black dude coming at you? What the fuck do you know? Just, you don't, and neither do I. So move on with your fucking life. Let's go protest downtown and throw eggs at the cop. What's that gonna fucking do for you? A police record. Now you gotta go somewhere once a month and talk to some fucking Harvey homo about what you did last week. Have you been protesting? What happens if you're, how the fuck, can you imagine getting like a misdemeanor in jail? Like, I'm in jail next to you, all coked up and shit. What are you in here for? Smacking a motherfucker, you know what I'm saying? What are you here for? Running over a homeless guy. What are you here for? Protesting. The whole room just shuts the fuck up and stares at this motherfucker like, do we smack you first or bitch slap you or fuck you in the ass? Which one? In what order? Fucking people. Sick and tired of fucking people making me feel weird. Like, I gotta feel like a fuck. It's like when you watch TV, they always make you feel fucking weird, you know? That Sarah McLachlan with her fucking animals. You ever get stoned and that commercial comes on? You're like, you're ruining my fucking high, cocksucker, with those ugly fucking dogs. I already got 7 cats. Fuck you and your fucking sad commercial trying to make me fucking feel bad. Because you're a fucking moron. I'm over here in a turkey sandwich with mayonnaise. And you're fucking talking about dogs getting beat up. What type of bitch are you? Put that shit on in the morning. Ruin somebody else's fucking day, you dirty bitch. You know what really was starting to make me feel fucking bad? Those ISIS victims. They come on here. Nah, what the fuck? What the fuck? Why do I gotta fucking feel bad? Because mind your business. They all want to go volunteer. Mind your fucking business, all right? The fuck? And the parents. I'm telling you, he's a good boy. You know what my parents would say? Fuck him. Fuck him. You should have minded this, but I told him to stay in Jersey. He could have slept in the house, no rent. But no, he wants to go to Bangladesh and help fucking Arabs. Fuck him. Get it together, cocksucker. At least the Mexicans just chopped your head off on YouTube. There was no drama, right? They hit you with a Taco Bell commercial, boom, that's it, it's over. Mexicans don't fuck around. They're gonna cut your fucking head off, not today. They don't stand there, black guy with a black suit on. I'm gonna kill you with a fucking accent. Fuck no. They put you on TV, they put the camera on you, you blink 3 times, and they chop that motherfucker off. And then they sit there and cry and make me fucking feel. You know what, dog? I'm no black belt in karate. I don't fly through the fucking air. But I'm 306. You understand me? You want to chop my fucking head off? We're going to have a problem. I'm going to fucking go. I'm going to grab one of you by the fucking ear. You know me. Or poke you in the eye. I'm just not going to sit there with you letting me cut my fucking head off. Fuck you. I'll grab your dick so fucking hard. I'll twist it. As you're chopping my head off, I'll fucking bite that motherfucker. I'll bite your fucking dick while you're chopping my head off. You understand me? when my head hits the floor and my eyes blink like a chicken, your dick will be in my fucking mouth, cocksucker. I'll be a faggot in hell, but you'll be a dickless motherfucker. You understand me? When I get to hell, I'll give Satan that dick and tell him there's more where that came from, cocksucker. I love you guys. Thank you very much coming out here tonight. Coming to the stage, my main man, Lee Syatt. Where's Rogan at? He out there somewhere? Go get him. Tell him we're coming in here. The whole fucking family. Why are we fucking around tonight? These people are waiting to hear about Ferguson. They're waiting to hear about black people jumping up and down. Joe Rogan, come on up here, my brother. Let's do it. Fuck around here. Like I said, happy Thanksgiving to you fucking savages.
My friends.
A lot going on. Thank you. Like I said, thank you for driving around the protesters. Fuck those motherfuckers. There's no future in being a protester.
It's all white people.
Is it?
No. Yeah, it's white emo dudes with like really like mediocre beards. That's
Mexican
who's protesting.
Dudes with skateboards and shit.
They're looking to bang.
I don't trust Mexicans
white
with skateboards.
Chicks.
I want to see those sneakers. I want to see the mud on the sneaker. That's how I know the motherfucker's real. He ran here. He saved those fucking sneakers.
The Mexican dudes.
If you jumped the fence to get into America, you would never throw those fucking sneakers out. When you see a Nike commercial, you're like, Nike? The fuck did Nike do for me? I jumped over here with black zapatos and shit. Cost me $2 at the market and shit. Those some fucking Jew made them down here somewhere.
Joey Diaz will get you excited about shit you don't even agree with. They'd be like, no, man, throw those fucking shoes out. That's evidence. It's got Mexican soil on it.
You're going to save your shit. It's good luck. What's going on, baby? Talk to me.
I'm just mad at white people. I'm upset.
What's going on with Bill Cosby?
White people are shooting black people. White people are protesting. It seems to be white people the problem.
That Ferguson shit, it's called, you know, my buddy has a dealership there, and I've been calling him every day to check up on him.
It wasn't his dealership, was it?
No,
was
on, it's around the corner from him. They lit that dealership on fire. And he said, he goes, you know what, I serve to everybody who comes in here is pretty much black, so I'm not going to have a problem. But it's fucked up. They're going crazy everywhere.
They broke into black businesses.
Yeah, they
broke into the guy who the kid robbed before he got shot. They broke into his business and looted it. We're just waiting for the aliens to land at this point. Waiting for them to come, just give us a fucking bitch slap from the sky. Like, you fucking dummies.
They looted a dollar store. It didn't even make sense. Like, don't they usually loot TVs? They looted a dollar store.
Maybe there's some shit they specifically had their mind on.
But the whole thing was, that was a powder keg to begin with, you know? That place, there's no jobs. It's just a fucking hell.
Exactly, exactly.
And it was a powder keg. And you know what? Those people, whatever. We weren't there. We don't know what fucking happened. But they feel bit slapped, so.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that are looking at it in a superficial sort of a way where they're trying to, like, fix the problem. Like, the cop shot the guy. The cop's bad. Let's fix this. The real problem is the area itself and the lack of hope. These people have no way to get out of there. It's horrible. If there's no jobs and everyone in your neighborhood's a fuck up and it's all crazy and chaos and everyone's a criminal, try growing up there and seeing your own way through it. It's a one in a million person that recognizes the folly in that life. You know, it's hard. If you're a kid, it's hard to blame the kid. It really is. It's hard to blame any kid that grows up in that kind of environment. You're fucking surviving. And you're doing whatever you can do and you're getting by with whatever you can get away with. That's the reality of our world. And if we continue to ignore poor areas and continue to go overseas and fucking steal people's minerals and shit, you know, we're gonna ruin life. We're gonna ruin life. We go over to other countries and pretend it's super important that we get their oil. And meanwhile, we're letting the number one resource we have in this country is human beings. And we're letting a bunch of human beings just grow up in a fucking zoo. Just chaos, just so many problems, just arrests and cops and poverty and no jobs. And you know, you ever see that Michael Moore documentary on Flint, Michigan?
No.
It's so depressing. It's so depressing. And it has nothing to do with white, black, just anyone. There's white people that are born in Flint, Michigan that were there working in those plants, those auto plants, and they pulled out of there and those fucking poor people were starving. It's dark. You know, we have it super easy here in California, super easy here in L.A. If you're living in a really bad neighborhood and shit just goes terribly wrong and you're stuck there, and you're a little kid. Who the fuck are we? You know, who are we to try to figure out what it's like to live that life?
You know, I always tell people,
welcome to the comedy podcast. Here, it was like,
we're always very fortunate.
Trying to make you happy.
We get to travel a lot. You know, when you land in parts of Philadelphia, we see some fucking truth.
Oh yeah.
When you land in Buffalo, we see what, you know, economy is. When you land in Pittsburgh and you're performing in Pittsburgh and they don't open up downtown until there's a baseball game. Oof. Downtown doesn't open unless there's a fucking baseball game. Buffalo is dead. Cleveland is dead. These are places that it's just going to take anything to let them go off. You know, somebody shot some kid in Cleveland, unarmed kid in Cleveland, Saturday night, a 12-year-old with a BB gun. I don't know the whole fucking story. I'm surprised they're not going off there.
Well, there's a 911 call, and the 911 call is someone calling up the police complaining about this kid scaring the shit out of everybody. He's pointing a gun, and the guy in the 911 call says, I think it's fake. I think it's a fake gun, but I don't know. He's scaring the fuck out of everybody. He said shit, like, on the 911 call. And then they went and just shot him in 2 seconds. The cops pulled up and just started shooting. And he's 12. Yeah, it's fucking, this is the world we're living in. And not only that, imagine being a fucking cop. Imagine your job is showing up. You're in an unbelievably impoverished neighborhood, and you're showing up every day, and someone's either shooting people or robbing someone, and it's just everyday people are lying to you, and you're just shell-shocked. You mean, you want to talk about PTSD? Guys get PTSD from 6 months in Iraq. You can get PTSD like a motherfucker for 12 years in the police force. If you're in the police force for 12 years, who knows how that fucking guy's functioning? You know, we're assuming they're keeping it together because, you know, we like base our ideas of cops on fucking movies or something, you know? You know what I mean? Like, a real cop is a person, and a person that has to be the enemy, the professional enemy, with a fucking uniform that alerts everybody to your presence in some fucking stupid car with bright lights. So everybody knows where you are, and you're just traveling around near people who hate you, and you're supposed to arrest them. Oh, good fucking luck.
Well, how much has it changed? Because I've listened to Joey talk about, like, cops would come and talk to him and let him go, and now they're not doing that. They're just coming and shooting you.
You know, like, I see it in L.A. I see a fucking traffic jam in L.A., and when you get there, it's a fucking cop car pulled sideways talking to a fucking homeless guy. What's the use? What the fuck is this? It's Monday at 8 in the morning. Lee, is this not true? The dad was yelling at the cops.
From my car, he was yelling at cops in rush hour traffic, and I was on the
move
way to
the
breakfast.
Move the fucking car. Move the fucking car. You can't be that fucking stupid. You're a police officer. So there's a 50-50 situation here. You know, once you get fucking jaded here, there's a 50-50 situation.
By the
way,
on a
Monday night, I might get a call to save a pregnant woman. The chick's having a kid. And I go up the stairs and some guy fucking shoots at me. I'm going to go home and go, Jesus Christ, I tried to help somebody and somebody shot at me. That's in the back of my mind. You know what? From now on, when I get out of a car, I'm shooting first and asking questions later. I could see that happening.
Yeah.
You could see that happening. You know, I didn't see the interviews with George Satanopoulos, but I saw whatever the fuck his name is. George Satanopoulos, whatever his fuck.
Ringo Starr.
You know,
Carrot Top, whatever the fuck his name is.
That guy, he's not an intimidating guy, that white
Stephanopoulos?
Cop. No, the white cop that he's interviewing. The guy that shot this kid, he's not an intimidating guy. You know, and this kid was 6'6". And I don't know. I wasn't fucking there, but I could just imagine. I know what it is to be scared. And I know what it is to say, oh, he's coming back. I'm just going to shoot this motherfucker. Oh, you're coming back? I'm going to go get a fucking bat now. You want to come back? You want to come back? So there's 1,000 situations that could have happened. Like I said, we went up there. But I can't imagine being a cop for $30,000 a fucking year.
There's people that are looking at this. This is one of the things that's been disturbing me. There's something that's really transparent. There's people that are looking at this as an opportunity to be down. Like, as an opportunity to express your indignation, your anger at the system. And some of them are ridiculous. There's this one guy who is talking about, he's an old white dude who's talking about, there is no excuse. If a man is charging at every police officer, if they shot everyone who charged at them, there'd be thousands of people dead every year. Like, hey, Dick, there are. Like, there's more people have died by cops than have died in Iraq.
Is that true?
Yes, yes. More than 5,000 people have been killed by cops since the Iraq war is going on. More than 4,000 Americans died overseas. More people have been killed by cops. So, yeah, it happens. stupid. First of all, you're not even paying attention. They're not even, he's not even Googling, okay? Like, he's made a YouTube video with no Googling. Like, come on, man. So that's one thing. And two, like, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Because about 200 and what was he, 250 pounds or something like that?
6'6".
He was 6'6", 250 pound guy who you already shot is running at you.
And he shot him in the
and
head.
And you're telling me you shouldn't shoot him again? What are you, fucking crazy?
He
you really think you're going to stop
head.
Him from taking your fucking gun? What are you, fucking Steven Seagal? What are you going to do? Do you know some shit I don't know? Because I'm shooting them. If I shoot somebody and they're running at me, I will keep shooting until they stop running at me. That's generally how I operate. I'm not saying he was justified in shooting the kid, but this fucking idiot in this video saying he should have been able to handle him without shooting him after he shot him 4 fucking times already and the guy's still running. That's fucking Michael Myers. That's some Halloween shit. He's still running. That guy's shitting his pants. He's a white guy with a weak chin, okay? He's white like paper. He's got red pubes. They're fucking on fire as this guy's running at him. His butthole is like literally clinched to the point where his legs are numb and he's just unloading.
Now, what did he shoot him the first time?
I don't know if it was in the first hand. Time, but he got twice in the head. I heard that.
Oh, that's if you shoot him once and they move, you shoot him again. That's what you do.
Now, what happened to shoot
I mean,
him
I'm not saying he should have shot him, but I'm saying, like, this idea that, like, somehow or another he's going to be rational while he's shooting a guy is fucking crazy. He's in the middle of a life or death struggle, allegedly, all right? It's one or two stories you believe. Either you believe that he's a cold-blooded assassin and he just set out to kill this kid and he could have avoided it, or you believe that he freaked out and the guy was chasing him and he shot the guy and then... And then after it's over, everybody starts rioting. That seems more likely, right? I mean, I don't know what the fuck happened. I wasn't there. But I would hope that he's not like some cold-blooded killer. And I would hope that what everybody's doing by overreacting, instead of thinking about this one case, let's just talk about police brutality in general. Because there's plenty of evidence of police brutality that's accurate and real. And we should look at it in terms of why these people freaking out like that. And the job might be fucking too much. You know, it might be too much for a lot of people. Did you see that video where the guy beats the chick up on the highway in L.A.?
Yeah, the motorcycle.
She's walking down the street. He grabs her, throws her on the ground, starts fucking Mark Coleman-ing her. He's ground and pounding her on the highway. And someone was filming it, and he didn't know they were filming it. Like, that guy, what the fuck? How can you do that?
Oh, my God, and they hid him away, and they said it's under investigation. Let me ask you something. What's to fucking investigate? You punch him in the head, you put the handcuffs on.
He should have mounted her, first of all. He's in the half guard. She's blocking a lot of his shots with her. He's got shitty technique. He didn't even have to hit her. Guy should have just armbarred her.
I saw a lot of police brutality growing up, never on me. But I saw it in the Bergen County jails and like in the tombs where the motherfuckers come in, they're bleeding from the head. And they're still talking shit, like, fuck you, bitch.
Yeah.
They're like, I'm still standing, motherfucker. And they throw him in the cell, and they're like, you're not getting stitched up after court. I don't give a fuck, bitch. I don't give a fuck. Fuck you and the judge. I remember being in that Bergen County jail one night, and we both went for bail. And this guy was fucking the droplets. Were dropping from his fucking head. They wouldn't help him. They wouldn't help him. And he was sitting there in the droplets, and he's like, you know, I'm still bleeding, Your Honor. And the judge wouldn't even make believe like he was talking. So I've seen it, right there, right next to me. Once I see a guy bleeding the cell, I don't say shit. I didn't say a fucking word the rest of the night. They bailed my ass out. I wasn't scared of the fucking jail cell. I was scared of this guy bleeding all fucking night, because I'd snap eventually. But I've seen police brutality, and I've seen when 10 cops come to break up a fight.
No doubt.
And you turn around, and boom, they hit you with a police stick. They busted my buddy's nose one night. So I've seen it. You know, but again, I'm not on the other side of that fucking car. I don't know when I'm coming out of there. I don't know what to expect, so I'm coming out swinging. So, hey, things have changed, people. We got animals out there. We got fucking real deal animals.
I think, you know, it's obviously a tremendous tragedy because a kid lost his life. And he could have grown up to be a great person. He could have had a different path and been a great person. So it's obviously a tremendous tragedy. But the biggest tragedy is that everybody's looking at it as like this one incident. That's not the biggest tragedy, but one of the parts of the tragedy that disturbs me is that everyone's looking at this one incident, but we got a real problem in like bad neighborhoods all across the country. Camden, New Jersey doesn't even have cops anymore. In Detroit, you could buy a house for $400. Like, we went to Detroit to film that sci-fi show. It's crazy. I mean, you can't believe how poor... They're basically camping. You're running into a lot of people that are camping in a city. I mean, that's essentially how people are living. And it's not just a few. There's no jobs. I mean, it's supposedly coming back. There's some sort of renaissance. That's our real issue, is raising kids up in poverty and crime. And raising kids up around poverty and crime, they grow up and they become a part of the same, they perpetuate the same thing that they've seen their whole life. It's a cycle. That's the horrific thing. I mean, not just that this kid lost his life, that's absolutely horrific. Not just that, you know, that whole place is just riddled with violence and crime, but it's just like, there's almost no way out of it, you know? There's almost no way to fix it.
And that's why a lot of these people are up in arms, you know, Detroit. Because they got nothing else to do. They're seeing it. They've already been kicked in the fucking balls. They lost their plant. Their plant moved to China to make Hong Kong, whatever the fuck they're making. You know, their 16 weeks of fucking unemployment ran out. Obama didn't give them a fucking extension. You know, they've already refinanced their fucking house. What's left, guys? What's left? To go out there and fucking burn stuff? And, oh, we're going to this verdict. I bet you this. Half of those people just wanted a guilty verdict. So they go get a new TV. Or a new fucking skateboard or something. Because that's what they do, looting. I've never looted.
Yeah, that was the weirdest thing that I saw, was not just the looting, but I follow a lot of, like, weird people online that I don't agree with, but I'm just interested in their point of view. Like, I follow a lot of, like, really super hardcore progressive people, like super hardcore liberals, super lefties. And this one dude was saying that private property is only protected if people respect you. And I guess people didn't respect these corporations. And then it said, fuck the police. And I was like, what? Like, and there was like a fucking H&R Block with a rock through its window. And then there was a picture of a BMW dealership that said, fuck corporations. And it had its window smashed. And this guy was like retweeting that, like, yeah. Like, you fucking idiot. You're using a corporation to make this message on your stupid phone, you fucking dummy. Like, that's a corporation had to make your phone. A corporation had to put together the internet. A corporation made the computers that are servers. You need a car to get around. Corporations make those cars. Like, BMW's not evil. They're making nice cars. That's it. You don't have to throw a rock through their window because a kid got shot in another state. Like, that's fucking ridiculous. And then to write, fuck the police on that. No, you just fucked BMW over. The police weren't even involved. It's like this weird thinking. Like, we're going to burn this motherfucker down. You live here. If you burn it down, you live here.
Maybe he was Jewish and he had a complete different set of issues. You know what I'm saying?
It's a good possibility.
Down the street, he goes, fuck the fucking
keeps a
blacks.
Grudge.
I'm going to throw this rock through fucking BMW.
That's an old school grudge. They used to make Nazi engines for airplanes.
Yeah, no shit. That's
yeah.
Didn't Volkswagen, wasn't Hitler driving a convertible Volkswagen way back then?
I think Hitler had an Audi, too. I think they had like some Audi race car they made for Hitler. It's worth like $1 billion or something now. It's a cool looking little like tic-tac box with wheels. They had stupid looking cars back then.
Meanwhile, you know Bill Cosby, the homegoing. Thank God that shit in Ferguson is going down. It takes the heat off me for 5 fucking days. You know he is saying that. He was like, ooh. He was praying for that motherfucker to come back guilty. He's in a fucking cave right now with dirty movies. Burning that fucking chemistry set and shit. Because you know he was making them homemade Quaaludes and shit. He was double dosing those motherfuckers, dog. I did some creepy shit in my day. I've never dosed a person's drink, dog. I've given them aspirin and told them it's Coke. You know what I'm saying? Whatever gets a blowjob at 4 in the morning. That's American ingenuity, giving a freak. Because I'm saving that rock till I know for sure you're sucking dick. You understand me? I might bring you home, you might have a boyfriend, and I'm throwing worthless coke at you. That shit ain't gonna happen. You think I'm fucking kidding you, dog? You think I'm fucking with you? I had a girlfriend. I had a little freak on the side that I would go over there and eat her little monkey when I was coked up. And put coke rocks on her pussy and shit. And when that bitch had her period, I would stay fucking clear from that house and shit. She'd be calling me, come over, fuck you. You got a little fuse down there. I'll catch you next week. I ain't wasting coke on that.
She was just shaking her head in disgust. She was like, this motherfucker. What's wrong with a period? Why are you so upset? What are you scared of?
Fuck that noise. They got that fucking bloody thing. I ain't coming over. Fuck you. I'll save my coke rock and jerk off. I don't give a fuck. Because even if you suck my dick, I can't finger bang you while you're sucking it. So I just got that one hand up. Fuck you. Vote for me. I don't need that shit. I want to grab something.
You let a girl piss on you? You let a girl piss on you, but you won't fuck a girl with a fucking...
You seem concerned.
Yeah. Because he yells at me every week, you need to lick an asshole, you need to let her go piss on you.
Don't listen to him. Listen to me. Okay. I can translate.
Listen.
He doesn't mean everything he says. A lot of things he says
are
just funny.
You've been pissed on by a woman?
There you go.
Never been pissed on?
Me?
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
There's a lot of moments in my life that are really cloudy. I look back and think, I'm not sure. You know, I could lie. I'm not exact. I could be lying to myself about a lot of shit that happened. If you go over your own life. You ever talk to somebody whose memory of an event was totally different than yours? Like, one of us is fucking crazy. I know who the fuck it is, but you have a story that's very different than the one I've been fucking bouncing around my head. When you start out in booze and weed, and then all of a sudden you're home, you're like, what happened? You know, there's those moments where you're in bed, you're like, okay, I guess we made it. You're just kind of waking up, and you're like, I check your car, there's no blood on it. Okay. Didn't hit anything. How the fuck did I? Okay, whatever.
I saw a guy Thursday night in Philly I hadn't seen in 30 years, and after the show, we hugged, and a bunch of guys, and we took pictures, and he pulled me aside and goes, the last time I saw you, you had a bag of coke with a bloody nose, a ripped jacket, and $1,000 cash. You were living under a rocket ship. And I'm like, you're fucking cloudy, Jack. There was no $1,000. You understand me? Why would I be under a rocket ship if I had cash on me? He goes, you're right. You've come a long way. I go, I know. I was under a rocket ship at a park. You know those parks that have rocket ships?
You slept under that?
And I went under there because I thought the cops were looking for me. And I just went under there with a bag of coke. I was bleeding from my nose. And I just kept wiping it. I would wipe it and put a coke rock up my nose. And just hope. And that's when he came by. He's like, what are you doing? Hold on one second. Let's get this coke dissolved.
Next thing you know, he's watching you in a fucking kids movie.
Yeah, can you fucking believe that shit?
The dog who saved Christmas. I watched that shit with my kids. They love you. It's hilarious. I'm like, I told them, their mother was out of the room. I go, if you only knew what a freak he is. And they're like, what does that mean? Nothing. It's crazy. He's just crazy. They're 6 and 4. They haven't figured that shit out.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
They love you, dude. They love you. They love those kids movies. And knowing you as long as I've known you and all the crazy stories you told me, I fucking howl when I see that you're in a kids movie. I'm like, do these motherfuckers not have the internet? Do you have any idea? One day, one of those moms is gonna Google, he was so funny in that movie with the dog. The dog who saved Christmas. What's his name? It's Joey Diaz. And they go directly to a video of Joey's balls. What am I saying? How is this on the internet? This is not the same guy from the dog movie. Oh no, kids. That could be a real fucking problem. You've done 5 of those. They're like little bombs waiting to go off. They don't know. You know who's... Someone's going to get fired at Disney. They're going to get fucking fired.
And the best is when I go to those Disney parties and they hug me. And tell me how funny I am. And I'm like, if you only fucking knew.
I just want to hand them a business card that has the exact podcast where you talk about using your fingers to pull tinfoil out of chick's ass while you're banging her from...
Oh, my God. But I don't know how, like, this is why I have no trust in the system anymore. Like, I lost trust. When people tell me things, I think, things are gonna happen. Shut up. Nothing's gonna happen, all right? I've done this 1,000 times. Just look straight, shut your fucking mouth. Years ago, they caught a producer. This is a note from Nickelodeon on one of those shows where they leave the door open and you come in naked. Looking for the kid, and you sit there like...
To catch a predator.
This is a true story. They caught one of the producers from Nickelodeon. So now when you go to Nickelodeon, you have to do a background check. They don't even hire you.
So they caught a pedophile that worked for Nickelodeon to catch a predator?
Catch a predator. And they got out there. So when you go to Nickelodeon for a thing, you don't go to a casting director no more. You go to Nickelodeon. Before they give you the size, you do a background check. So once I did the background check, I was like, there's no use in me sitting here. Like, I should just go home. But I go, I already drove here. Let me read for the fucking role. So I went in, read, they were all giggling, and I put it down. I go, that's great. You know, because once the police report comes back, this tube gets thrown in the garbage, right? I got a call 2 days later. They hired me, not for one episode, but for three. And they love me. Like, they're like, we love you. Oh, my God. Like, it's fucking amazing how I keep passing.
Did you ask them?
No, I shut my fucking mouth. I don't say nothing. I don't claim liability, because then if they come to me, they go, oh, Mr. Diaz, we have to speak to you. You got a conviction for kidnapping. You got a whatever. I could always go, what name did you look it up? Jose Diaz. Are you fucking crazy? No, listen, don't even believe that. There's 1,000 Jose Diaz. It's John Smith in the American language. Jose Diaz is John Smith in the American language. If they look deeper, by the time they look, I'm done already. I've already shot the movie, I've eaten the crab service, I stole the shirt, and I'm on my way home. You understand me? By the time they get the FBI and the FBI, NCIC, I'm already done.
NCIC?
Yeah, but I know all the agencies, trust me. You gotta know the animal you're dealing with. But it's amazing, you know, when you get a plane ticket now, as soon as you log your name in that thing, it's over. They're looking at you in a satellite from fucking Russia. Seriously, a lot of people, when you go to the hospital, they do a background check. As you're getting stitched up and they're taking the fucking glass out of your ankle, when you come out, like, excuse me, Mr. Diaz, there's a guy here to see you. You know, it's that quick, but I can't believe that Nickelodeon hired me. I'm not mad at them, but this is just to let you know. Just take the chance. Just go down. Who gives a fuck? Deny it till the end. Make them pay for the deep, deep, deep background check.
Don't you think, though, that, like, with show business, that they give you a little bit of extra room because they want someone who's a character, and a lot of times characters have, like, really fucked up backgrounds. So they look at you, and they go, yeah, but it was, like, 25 years ago.
Oh, yeah, it was a long fucking time ago.
Like, it was, what year was it that you got out? You got out in 88.
No, 91.
Okay, so that's 24 something right. years, right? That's a long
then
time.
I got in trouble in Seattle. Now in Seattle, it's very interesting. I got into a misunderstanding at a bar, and when there was a cop upstairs, but he was Puerto Rican from New York. So when he ran down, he pulled me off the guy, and when I slammed his back, there was like six of those guys, and it was me and Ron Reed. At the time, I was maybe 36, and Ron Reed was my age now. Basically an old fucking man with glasses. Ron Reed weighed 120 pounds. I was so fucked up at that time in my life. I was going through a divorce. I was broke. I was living in an office. I went and grabbed that cop's gun. On the way back, I grabbed that motherfucking gun from my left hand. I was like, I'm gonna shoot one of these bastards now. And he grabbed my hand. He goes, think about what you're doing. Never came up in a police report. But when I slammed him back, that's the first thing I went for. I thought he was that cool that he would let me pull the gun out and shoot him in the back of my fucking mind. You know, it was like Lethal Weapon when he gets the gun, him and the black guy at the end, and they shoot the fucked up guy. But this is shit that, you know, how lucky am I? Like, when I see this shit, I'm going for a gun. That's why I want to know this kid's police record.
I want to know the kid in Ferguson.
Yeah, I want to know. You know, you start off slow. You rob a doctor's office. You shoplift. You might assault somebody. Then you go for a cop's gun. He was 18, but you know what? That's the society that motherfucker lives in.
Yeah.
So, you follow me?
Yeah.
So that's, what if he would have, you know, gone for his utility gun and shot me in the back when I was going for his service revolver? Because that's how fucked up I was. I thought that if I went for the gun and shot him, this cop would go, yeah, there were six of them, and they'd stick up for me, whatever the fuck. So, same fucking shit, people. I'm really stoned. I don't know where I'm getting at with this. But that's why.
I know what you're saying, and it's you're a really good example of how someone can be in a bad place and do a lot of fucked up shit, but be a very good person. And I think we don't ever want to consider that. We want to consider that this kid did some bad things or he robbed somebody. He's a bad kid. But I think you have to look at the environment that they're developing in, that they're growing up in.
Always. I've given people that second chance. Because I've thought about my life and I know where I was. Once your central nervous system and belief breaks down, most people don't come back from that, guys.
Bless you, dude.
Thank you. Bless you. Look, salute. I ain't lying.
Let me ask you this, because you've been through it. You've been like, you know, you're a great upstanding member of society, and you were a criminal at one point in time. You are. You're a family man now. You pay taxes, the whole deal. You know, like, what could be done? What could be done for those kids, for the Michael Browns that are out there in the world that are just in this terrible situation? Well, you've been there.
One fucking word. That's hope. Right now I'm dealing with a friend of mine who, his kid tried to ice himself. And the parent called me, yelling, you know, but what's going on? I go, listen, do you have any idea what it is to be raised without a father? You fucking don't. Okay? You fucking don't. She's 18. She's never met her fucking father. You know, she's been raised by her grandfather. You know, you have questions, you have doubts. You're acting out, she's cursing. She didn't try to ice herself, she took cough medicine, that's what they turned it into. But they found out she's drinking, you know, whatever. People have to, I always want people to check that. What's he going through? In my situation, I lost a parent. I lost one word, bro, hope. All you need, today I called the guy and I thanked him. I wished him a happy Thanksgiving, who saved my life. 1984. Right now, 30 years ago, I was in hell, guys. You have no fucking idea. I was living in people's basements. I had a winter jacket that was ripped. You know, I was doing blow every night. I would sneak into people's houses in the daytime and take showers and take one of your t-shirts. You have no fucking idea. And one day I bumped into this guy in the street that was a teacher of mine. And he pulled me aside. He looked at the fucking shape of you. And I worked this drug dealer over and I robbed him. And I called Mr. T and Mr. T picked me up. And he didn't change my life, but he slowed me up for 30 days, 60 days, for me to take a look. And I stopped doing blow for a year. But he saved me. I called this guy today. He gave me one word. He gave me hope. You know, he talked to me. He told me what was going on. And I believed him. And then it put me on the right track, yeah, for a while. But I always had hope after that. Even when I went to prison and I was looking at 9 years and shit, I was like, I'll come out from those 9 years and I'll turn my life around. Just a little bit of hope. Just somebody to believe in. Somebody to believe in you. Once somebody starts talking to you and you find out they lie to you, there goes your hope. There's so many little things when you're 18, 19, you have no fucking patience for. You know, I destroyed the little family I had left with lies and shit because of my anger towards them. They didn't give me enough when my mother died. They didn't call me every day. I was furious. I robbed my godfather, the guy who put water in my head in a fucking thing at a church. You know, because he didn't call me for 2 years. You know, I was so angry. And I look at that now. I didn't rob my fucking godfather, you know, $20,000 because I hated him or because I was a thief. It was because of the anger that was in my heart towards him. So that's it. It's just hope. You gotta give a kid fucking hope, man.
You know what I think is also important to think of, and I don't think most people will take this in consideration when you think about people that are in a life of crime, is that it's very likely if you lived their life and took all the steps that they took and had all the things happen to you that happened to them and went to the same places, did the same things, you would be them. You would be them if you lived their life. And we don't think that way because we always think of our life and like, hey, I would never do that. Right, because you live in fucking Altadena, you know? Like, it's nice there, you know? You have a fucking Toyota, it works, you get to school, everything's fine. You got a part-time job. I'm not fucking robbing cops, right? But if you lived that kid's life, it's very possible you'd be doing the exact same thing. We don't like to think of that. People like to think of everybody as being, we were all unique in our own environments and unique in our own life experiences and our genetics and everything. But the reality is, if you were living that guy's life, it's very likely you would do the same thing. Like, what makes someone exceptional and what makes someone stand out? A lot of times, it's not just who they are inside, but it's also their environment and the things that they learn and the people that they emulate and the positive forces around them is what a lot of times makes great people. And a lot of times, bad people, you would be that person too if you lived their fucking life. And we don't want to think about that because we don't have to. You know, I don't have to live your life. You know, I went to high school in Newton, Massachusetts. Like, I wrote in my high school yearbook, Fast Times at Hebrew High. It wasn't dangerous at all. They were nice. You know, it was like mostly Jewish school. They said that was offensive, though. They wouldn't let me put that in there. I'm like, why can't I say that? That's not even mean. It's true. There's like a lot of Jewish people. Like a lot of my friends are Jewish. Why can't I say that? It's offensive. Okay. So I didn't put it in there. But my point is, if I lived your life, it's very likely I would have been doing the same fucked up things that you were doing. And if you lived my life, you know, whatever.
I, I blame environment in a lot of ways, but then look at Lee's girlfriend. She's from fucking Guadalajara downtown. You know?
Right.
You know, a husband, a mom and a dad, and two people living in the house. You know, I mean, Lee, you told me last night they looted.
Yeah, during the Rodney King riots.
They were poor.
They were here from Mexico, and they were fucking... I was talking to them, and the mom is, like, from Mexico, and she said her nieces and nephews, the best job is to be in the cartel, and moms want their daughters to marry people in the cartel because they're the only people with money. They said it's actually not a bad life, but it's fucking...
If you're in that environment, right? If you're in that environment, it becomes normal. I was just in Mexico City, man. Super nice people. Like, the nicest people ever. They're jammed into this place. Like, they weren't even honking. Like, they have gridlock 24 hours a day. Like, when you're during rush hour especially, nobody stops for red lights. They just kind of, like, fucking merge. And nobody freaks out. Red lights are like suggestions, you know? But... that's their life, you know. You get, even if you're over there for a few days, it becomes normal. It's like, well, this is how we drive, you know. Nobody like that. Those things that they put in like white neighborhoods, like keep this clear. Get the fuck out of here. Nobody. They would laugh at you in Mexico. Oh, look, we're not supposed to go into there. But if you go into there, then you're never gonna get over there. Fuck this. They just go. It's just chaos. Like, people want to cross, they just have to just smush in. And then everybody waits, and then they smush in more, and fucking cars go by, and they jam them in. That's their reality, though. If you lived there, that would be your reality. Like, I get that people want to engineer our reality in a better way, because they don't like police violence. So, and it's a huge problem. But it's also a problem there's so much fucking crime. It's also a problem there's no hope. It's also a problem, the extreme poverty is the real problem. More so, and maybe the cause of a lot of the violence, both from the cops and from other people. There's just craziness there, you know? We're lucky, we're here in Pasadena, chilling at the Ice House, you know? There's nothing going on here, everything's cool. Everybody's friendly, you know what I mean?
This is lucky as shit. We're in a good spot.
In the summer of 75, I was hanging out on my block, giving that terrorist, right? And I was hanging out with these dudes playing stickball, whatever. Kicked the can, a bunch of crazy little Italian motherfuckers, the Zanattis and shit. And there's this family, the Clemens. There was like eight white dudes in a house. And they were very nice. They were very mechanically inclined. But the word got out that they had fleas. And that's always bad, right? When the word gets out that a family has fleas, oh my God. Parents in the 70s, that's like having VD now, like chlamydia, oh my God. So even the fucking, you know, the Spanish people were saying, psst, Clemito tiene piojo, right? His name was Mike Clemens, right? But the Spanish people would tell the white kids, psst, don't hang with him. Clemito tiene piojo. So the word got out, but the white kids was telling other white kids in Spanish, Clemito tiene piojo, right? So Anthony Balzano, we were playing one day, and I guess Clemens tackled him, and he goes, get off me, bro. You got fucking piojos and shit. So the kid's like, what's piojos? What the fuck is that? He goes, fleas, motherfucker. Your whole family got crucas. Even the fucking girls. It's like the fucking Marines in that house, right? So they got into a fist fight in the street. This is a true story. Mr. Clemens came out, and he grabbed Anthony off his kid, and he goes, get the fuck out of here, you guinea motherfucker. And he goes, I'll be back in 5 minutes with my father, right? And we're all hanging out, me, a bunch of us, Special, Valentin Ferro. Valentin Ferro was a Spanish kid that his mother used to whistle for him, but it was like a dog whistle. Nobody heard it except Valentin. He could be 18 miles away. We could be in a motorcycle. I gotta go. Valentin, where the fuck you going? We're robbing a motorcycle. Come on back. All right, we're all hanging out. Bunch of us fucking throwing. All of a sudden, a cop's car come up. Two police cars, an unmarked one and a marked one, right? Carmine gets out of the car, and Mr. Clemito comes out. He goes, get the fuck off my block, Carmine. It was a thing beside kids. Get the fuck out. And Mr. Balzano's like, open up the fucking thing, you know, because they had the screen door. He's like, open up the fucking screen door. I want to talk to you. He goes, Carmine, go home. I'm telling you right now. Now, all the neighbors in the block came out. He's like, Carmine, go home. I'm telling you right now, nothing happened. I'm going to call the police. He goes, we are the fucking police. I just want to know what the fuck happened. Now, get out of here. He fucking opens up the screen door, and he grabs Mr. Clemens. Mr. Clemens pushes him. He goes, that's fucking assaulting a cop. They put the handcuffs on him, right in broad daylight, 4:15 in the afternoon. He turns him around, he starts bitch slapping him, right? Bah, 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 just bah, bah. All of us were like, oh shit. Oh shit. He uncuffed him. Mr. Clemens went down, the family came out, they were bandaging him and shit. Mr. Balzano looked at us, he goes, any problems here in the neighborhood? Nobody said nothing. We all went into the house and shit. Mr. Clemens got up and he's like, I'm calling the police. We are the police. Shut the fuck up. They all got in the car. They backed out of there, and he, for years, that guy's like, I'm calling the police. That was police brutality. He had ice in his head. That's it. The neighborhood's going to shit. And everybody went in their house and mind their business. Till today, Mike Clemens won't be my friend on fucking Facebook. I try to, for years, I've been trying to Facebook that motherfucker. Because me and Mike were tight and shit. But me and Carmine were tighter. Mike was good with a bicycle. Mike was the type of kid that come over your house and like, Mike, what's wrong with my bicycle? You get on it. Coco, you gotta put oil on the chain. You know what I'm saying? And he turned the bike around and all the chain feet and shit. You gotta tighten this. You gotta tighten. You gotta put a banana split. I think I have a washer in my house. He was a nice guy, so I feel bad because that was the first time I saw it. But it was hilarious to me then. But now it's pretty fucking sad because it kind of broke up a neighborhood. You know?
Aww.
Fucking crazy. He just started smacking him. This dude just fell down like a cartoon thing and he just uncuffed him and left him there. And the family came out and people were mowing their lawns and shit. So
wasn't that like your first day in the neighborhood?
No.
What happened the first day you went out? Another fight
same
happened.
Same thing. Another fight. Every time there was a fight, you know, when you know your father's a tough guy and a cop, you're going to push the envelope a little bit. You know, and Anthony always would go out, get into a fist fight, and then tell the fucking adults, go fuck yourself. Fuck you. I'm going to get my father. Let's see how tough you are, motherfucker. And within 10 minutes, the fight. Three times I saw him. I saw him beat a gym teacher up. Mrs. Totoro, I saw him beat a gym teacher up. And the next day this was in the seventh grade. He beat him up when he was in the seventh grade because, again, the kids were saying, Coco Kare Moco. I was playing kickball and I was kicking the ball, and all the white kids were saying, Coco Kare Moco. And he kept saying, don't talk Spanish on my fucking gym class. So that was the wrong thing to say. They're like, what the fuck are you getting at, motherfucker? And he goes, I don't want to hear Spanish, which was correct. It's America. Speak fucking America. He was just trying to prove a point. It's the truth. It's fucking America, cocksucker.
I agree.
My mother would always tell me, you can speak Spanish in the house. Don't be speaking Spanish out there. I don't want these fucking people to look down on you. Speak your fucking language. You're American now. She would never even let me talk with that fucking Ricky Ricardo lisp. I'm serious. They took that shit away from me at an early age. There was a sign of fucking, man, how are you doing? Fuck no. I'm a fucking American, cocksucker. So, I remember before that, years earlier, it was a teacher, Mr. Fontana. Two kids were speaking Spanish on the baseball bus. He told them to shut the fuck up. They didn't shut the fuck up. He threw them off the bus. The kids had to walk 40 miles.
40 miles?
Yeah, that was a big issue.
Wait a minute.
It was a big fucking issue.
Were you going to school out of state?
No, we were playing, you know. Let's say you were from North Bergen and you played baseball in Seaside Heights. It's 60 fucking miles.
So he really made him walk 40 miles?
I guess they called the parents after 20 miles.
What would you do to that teacher if he did that to your kid?
It was a different society then. See, I don't know what's going on with Adrian Peterson. I know he got in trouble for hitting his kid. I don't know what extent. But when I was growing up, if you went home and you told your parent you got in trouble, your parents smacked the fuck out of you first. Then they took you to school, and then when they found out what happened, they fucked you up again. So, you understand me? Like, parents were like, what? No. Wait a second. You didn't get thrown off the bus. Bam! And they start smacking you. So, you were scared to call your parents in those days because, you know, so it was different. So that kicked that off. And I remember eating dinner with my mom one day. And telling her the story, and she's like, he's right. He's America. Speak the fucking
language. It's a different era. You know, it was a different era. People hit their kids back then, it was normal. Like, everybody hit their kids. When my parents were growing up, everybody got hit. I mean, they all talk about it. They're like, they would laugh at someone saying, do you hit your kids? Like, who doesn't? So then my parents sort of deviated from it a little bit. They kind of sort of stopped hitting their kids. They only hit me a couple times. And then I don't hit my kids at all, but my kids hit me. My daughter will fucking leg kick me hard. Like, she knows how to throw leg kicks. I taught her how to pivot. So, like, she'll come and, "I told you I want to play goldfish. Whack!" And she'll fucking hit me with an Anderson Silva to the thigh. I'm not kidding. She fucking leg kicks me hard. It's hilarious because she's six. Around 10, it's not going to be funny anymore, right? It's going to, like, "Hey, bitch, that shit hurts." Like, at six, it's just silly. But, yeah, they're not scared of me at all. My dad was fucking terrifying when I was a little kid.
The power of the belt is so strong. I want you to think about this. I don't know how old you guys are, what age bracket, but the power of the belt is so strong that sometimes, like, when you see Scarface, the most, you know, the movie Scarface, the first scene when they cut the shoulder off is very, like, you fucking, when you saw it in the movie theater, you're fucking breathing. But the beauty of Scorsese is one of the most deepest scenes in fucking Goodfellas is when he's whipping them with the belt. If you're for real, you fucking cringed up in that chair. And he fucking comes over with that belt. If you're for real and you've ever got hit with a fucking belt, you know, you fucking cringe up. That's a real scene, Jack. When you can hear that belt fucking whipping, that's tremendous fucking, you know. I mean, it's not Denzel and Glory, but, you know, Denzel and Glory, tremendous.
You know, it's too...
Nobody could take that shit. That little skinny girl and 12 Years a Slave. Nobody could take those type of beatings now.
Well, how about you go back to Roots and Kunta Kinte when they made him change his name to Toby?
Damn.
Do you remember that shit? What's your name? Wap, Kunta Kinte. What the fuck? We were watching it on TV going, holy shit, they're making him change his name. Whipping him until he changed his name.
How powerful was Roots?
Oh, my God.
As a child, you fucking, oh, my God, you didn't want to leave the house the next day. You're like, God.
How many dudes convinced their girlfriend that it's you don't have to go to the church to get married, but just jump over this broom like they did in Roots? Remember, they jumped over the broom? That's how they got married? They would jump over a broom together? They probably made that shit up for the movie. Just because it was like some Hollywood shit.
Night fucking spectacular on ABC.
Yeah.
And after the second night, you didn't leave the house. They did two of them when we were kids. They did that one and a show called Rich Motherfucking Man, Poor Man with Nick Nolte and shit. Damn! Damn!
But Roots was like a cultural event. Roots was like probably one of the most important events for like alleviating racism in my childhood.
Well, yeah, it woke you up. We didn't really know. We just saw the picture of Frederick Douglass in the dictionary. Close that motherfucker, remember?
Yeah.
Remember the first time you saw a picture of Frederick Douglass?
Our generation. And that dude became the dude on Star Trek, right? The guy, the blind guy? Wasn't he the same dude?
Frederick
LeVar?
Douglas?
Wasn't LeVar?
Yeah, Lamar, right. In fact, he's a producer. He's a producer, and I read for him in an audition.
What is it, for LeVar Burton?
Yeah, LeVar Burton.
He was Kunta Kinte,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he was Kunta Kinte.
That was a crazy fucking show.
That
because
was crazy, guys.
You know, we were forced, white people were forced to pay attention to slavery for like the first time ever. It was on TV. And that was back when there was only four channels.
Yes.
Let me three, right? Let yeah, it wasn't even you. Fox, you're right, three.
Let me tell you how deep my Jimmy is. That shit's opened up on a Sunday night. And that Sunday night, I went to see the band Yes at the Garden. And they were so fucking bad that I walked out of there. Like, I had gone to see them every year for like 3 years, but this time they were so fucking bad. I think it was 78. 78, because I was a freshman in high school. And I said, I'm going home. And I remember going home, putting it on, and it was fucking tremendous. It was fucking
It was a crazy documentary. Crazy show, rather. Crazy series. Miniseries, I guess it was.
Miniseries. That's from now they'd have nothing. They tried to bring back Dallas. Fuck that. Once the guy died, the show was dead. Once Larry Hagman, whatever. What's his name? Larry Hagman died, the show sucked. So, tremendous fucking night. We went from Ferguson to a fucking cop beating somebody up. Bro, that was the best neighborhood ever that I grew into. Whenever I go to Jersey, I always go down that block. That is my, I have a picture of that block. On that block, we had a guy that answered all your questions. He was like a Puerto Rican pervert. Yeah, right? His name was Nelson. He was a waiter in the city. And like, if you went to Nelson and go, Nelson, what's marijuana? You want to smoke something? Yeah. You got to give me $5. I'll go get you a nickel bag. He always was a hustle. But the best hustle he ran was the sex game. Like, we went to him first. And we're like, what's going on with sex, dog? And he's like, well, you got to suck titties. You could fuck. But better yet, come by my house at 7 o'clock tonight. Sit outside my window. I want $2 from all of you. We would give him $2. And we would sit outside his window. He'd fuck his girlfriend with the curtains. We couldn't see, but we could hear. Fucking tremendous. Tremendous. And we were all like 11, and we'd be out there, and we'd giggle and shit. He'd be, let me suck your pussy. And we'd be like, ah. And at one point, you got so horny, your head would just get red as a motherfucker. And you just walked home with a limp and shit. You're like, it was fucking crazy. Nelson. I never forgot that motherfucker. He lived in like a one bedroom under like a family in Jersey. So we would walk into the backyard. He taught us about booze. He taught us about weed. Never molested us, nothing like that. Always told us about pussy and shit. How good it is when you shoot milk in their pussy. And we would look at him like this. Oh, wait till you come in there. Pussy is tremendous. And when that milk comes out of your dick. No, it doesn't.
That's hilarious.
That was a good fucking neighborhood, dog. Then there was a hot chick up the corner. And she used to have a daughter. And there used to be a fat dude that was 20 years older than her that would come over and fuck her. And we would torment her. Like he was like her, mistress. And we would come over and fuck Eddie Murphy. We didn't put a banana in your tailpipe. We used to put fucking big potatoes in his tailpipe. And he'd try to start his car and he couldn't start his car. We were tormenting dog. We were the real deal in that fucking neighborhood. We had this Italian guy, Otino, that hated everybody. Cubans, black people. He was Italian. He'd wear a little hat in front of his house. He'd just sit there, just like that. And he'd just sit there with a knife, eating like a pear or a peach every night. And when I walked by, I go, how you doing, Mr. Otino? Keep walking, Spicky. That's it. Keep walking, Spick. Keep walking. Don't even think to stop here. And whenever my mom would have a Santeria party, I'd walk by and go, hurry up home, they're cutting chickens. You know, I don't care about race. It was hysterical. That block had so much fucking heart. Like, I remember one time they were moving across the street, and the guys went back to get them. Me and my buddies robbed that house. While they were going to get more shit, like, we're in the eighth grade. We just robbed this house. And we got a stereo. We got a bunch of shit. I took the stereo with the two speakers. Guess what? The kid was cool. Kid was a great basketball player. I started being like his best friend. I'd invite him to the house. Let's go up to your room. You can't go to my room, bro. Raul was his name. I never forgot Raul and shit. Tremendous fucking block. Nothing but heart on that block. Timmy O'Neill still lives in that fucking house. His brother used to bang the Angel, the Salazzo twins. Angel. But he used to fuck her outside. Let me tell you the dedication this guy had. When he would dig a hole in the side of the mountain. And fuck her in the side of the mountain. And we would watch, and he'd be fucking, and he'd look up, I'm gonna get you motherfuckers. This was a tremendous fucking name.
Why did he fuck her in a mountain?
Because they were crazy. I don't know.
I'm so confused but entertained.
You think I'm gonna go over there and ask him, why are you fucking in a mountain when you live right over there?
I would have to know. That's
hysterical,
me.
Hysterical.
I would have to know.
What about the guy who worked for the Iceman, like two doors down?
The guy for the Kuklinski?
The side around the corner was Charles Court. I lived on Given That Terrace. The next block was Charles Court. Charles Court was one of those loops in the middle, had a little island. Giacona lived on that island, who you met. She went to dinner with us one time in Atlantic City, and Sabatino and Dean Altman and all these families. But on that corner there was the Pranges, and that was the guy who drove the Mr. Softy truck. And we used to always ask John Prong, hey, dog, why don't your father stop and sell us ice cream? He used to go, because my father don't sell that type of ice cream. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, dog, that guy lived right around the corner. And after all that shit went down, the mother changed her name. But let me take it back deeper.
But hold on a second. You're talking about the Iceman, the murderer. The guy who they made that HBO documentary?
HBO documentary.
They don't understand what you're talking about. They're all looking at you like, ooh.
This was the ice cream man, but here's where it gets fucked up. Like in 81, when Mr. Prange died, I saw Mrs. Prange at Gennaro's, a club in Hoboken where we'd go. They would let us in there without proof. And I ate a Quaalude one night. I started swapping spit with her. She's like, Coco, what are you doing? I'm in love with you, Miss Bromgate. She's like, come on, I used to serve you milk and cookies. Get out of here. I heard she's still fucking hot. I heard that bitch is still banging, dog. I always loved the older women in my neighborhood. I used to play basketball on 38th Street Court, and across the street was the Cardinelli's.
35 years later? Like.
Oh, bro, I taught Bobby Bender, who's married to
you seem incredulous.
I saw Bobby Bender when I went home last night for breakfast, who's Dee Dee Cardinelli's husband, and her mother used to be hot when we were kids. And at night, she knew when I was playing basketball, she walked. She had a French poodle that was blind, so she had to walk him across the street. And she used to always wear hot pants, and I used to look at her and say, one day I'm gonna fuck this lady, right? I had the hots for Dee Dee. I used to have, and her old man, her husband used to sit up top of the rocking chair and watch her from the balcony. I'm like, one day I'm gonna catch this bitch outside. I'm gonna fuck her. So like 2 years later, I got all fucked up one night. I prepared myself, I'm going to get Dee Dee. And I hid in the bushes, I swear to God, Joe Rogan. I hid in the bushes like a Junior Cosby. I just hid in the bushes. I'm sorry, Cosby Junior, whatever the fuck it is, right? I hid in the bushes. I was all fucked up. I drank and I snorted THC crystal with a bunch of us, and we listened to Led Zeppelin too. And we were lip syncing and shit. We got all fucking crazy. And they're like, where are you going? I'm going to fuck Mrs. Cardinelli, right? And I went over and I hid in the bush. She came out, I crossed the street. She had hot pants on. And I'm like, I love you, Miss Cardinelli. And we started talking shit. And then I felt over here, like I touched her little thigh. And she's like, what are you doing, Coco? And I go, let me kiss you, Miss Cardinelli. And she's like, oh, Jesus fucking Christ, are you drunk? And I'm like, no, I'm in love with you. And she let me kiss her on the cheek. She's like, go home, you fuck. And that was it. That was it, dog. Nothing. I touched a little thigh and shit. That was a crazy fucking night.
That's it. You know the crazy thing? I've known Joey for 20 years, and I still haven't heard all the stories. I still haven't heard all the stories. There's still new stories.
Oh, my God.
That's ridiculous.
Those are fucking ridiculous.
I've known you for what, 14 years now or something? 16 years?
20, yeah. 14.
How many years? When did we meet? Yeah, so that's like 16 years. That's a long time. And I still hear new stories.
This is giving out terror stories.
That's ridiculous.
This is fucking crazy, this story.
That's ridiculous.
We were like the first Spanish people. It was us.
I would have loved to see you try to kiss her. That must have been amazing. Like, if I go back to a time machine, fuck George Washington crossing the Delaware. What, it's an old dude in a boat. I don't give a fuck. I would want to see you. I would want to see you try to kiss that lady. Oh, drunk, little Coco. All fucked up. Telling her you love her. Leaning in.
I was like that episode of Little Rascals, Old Miss Crabtree. I got something heavy on my heart. That's one of the greatest episodes of all time.
Can you still watch those?
Yes.
Okay, that was that was the Bill Cosby rumor, right?
That's a lot.
Is that he had bought those, but that's horseshit, right?
He bought them, and you can't see him on television, and he re-edited them. But for all you racist people out there, you go on YouTube, and the most racist fucking thing I've ever seen in my life. There was only one racist thing I've ever seen. But I'm like, holy shit. And that's the episode of Little
Yum
Rascals.
Yum Eat 'em Up?
Yeah.
What
that
happened?
Is the most racist thing you will ever see in all your life. When I'm telling you, because I don't usually get affected by that shit, because I think that way also, but I'm not racist. You know what I'm saying? When I saw that, my jaw dropped. They could put that on you as a child. When you go home tonight or tomorrow, tweet me. And go to Yum Yum Eat 'em Up now. Online.
For real.
There's two of them. There's one that's the real footage, and it's just fucking brutal. And then there's one that somebody did a remix to. And it goes like, Yum Yum Eat 'em Up. Yum Yum Eat 'em Up. And this is like, you know, Buckwheat goes to see his uncle at the circus. Right? He doesn't know what to expect, Buckwheat. And this fucking African dude comes out. With full regatta. Supposedly the guy was a big time boxer in the 40s or the 30s. Look at this shit. You gotta put the volume. Hold on. So the guy was like a... And that's all this black guy says is yum yum eat him up, right? But they take him to a house and then he gets a bottle of like, what's it's something black people drink. I just don't know what
Cabassier?
It is. Malt liquor. And it's like a gallon of it. And he just drinks it and then he hits himself with the bottle over.
This is it. This is the Little Rascals. I think it's not even a black guy. I think it's a white guy with black face, which makes it even more offensive. And he's yelling, yum, yum, eat him up at these little kids, and they're running away.
Just here.
Just here. I mean, it might be a black guy, but it might be a Hawaiian.
Oh, my God. He's,
with some makeup on.
He's throwing bananas at him and shit.
Yeah.
He's trying to keep him at bay. He's throwing bananas at him. That's just wrong, man. But Cosby supposedly bought him and took all that kind of shit out of there, like anything that's racist. You know, if you go online now, there's two Sampling Sons when he goes to court and says all those shits to the judge. There's one that's right. Very clean, and there's one that lets him go off. So go to YouTube if you want to
see. Tell the Sanford and Sons one, because it's one of the funniest lines ever on TV. And they edited it.
You know, guys, Sanford and Son used to be on Friday nights after Chico and the motherfucking Man, or the other way around. I'm not kidding you. Sanford and Son was on at 8 o'clock, and Chico and the Man was at 8:30. And at that time, those were the best two comics, Norman Lear.
I used to watch both of them with my grandfather.
You motherfuckers did not go out. I don't give a fuck if a woman called you and said, I'm going to suck your dick at 8 o'clock. You'd say, it's got to be 9:05. Because from 8 to 9, I'm not fucking moving. If you were real and you appreciated comedy, that's what you did on Friday night. You got a pizza and you watched Sanford and Son with 8 of your buddies. You smoked a joint. You giggled like a fucking kid. And Sanford gets arrested and he...
Red Fox, Lamont, one of the greatest stand-up comics ever.
Lamont gets arrested, who's... Red Fox's son, and he comes home and tells him the story, and he goes to court. He has no attorney. He's going to represent himself. Lamont gets there, and next thing you know, Red Fox shows up as his attorney, and it's a black judge, and he starts fucking throwing heat, and he brings six of his blackest friends, and every time he says something, he gets a point across, his black friends get up and start pointing fingers and going, yeah, 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 yeah. It's fucking classic, you know? And he's got Rollo, he's got all these fucking guys that are his Goombas. And it's a white cop, right? And he's like, you know, can I ask the arresting officer a question? And the judge goes, yes, you may. And he goes, you arrest any white people? And the cop goes, yes, you are. He goes, well, where the hell are they? Take a look around you. Look at all these niggas in here. There's enough niggas in here to make a Tarzan movie. This is prime time television. This is right now. You know the shit you watch?
Big Bang Theory.
Yeah. That's Big Bang Theory.
Two and a Half Men.
8 o'clock. And he goes, where's all these niggas in here? And they go crazy because it's all black people. They're, yeah, 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 yeah. And the judge goes, yeah, well, I'm black. He goes, yeah, but you're the judge. You don't count, right? That's how fucking crazy this was. I sat there the first time I saw that, my jaw really dropped. I was a little kid at home. I had heard Richard Pryor and shit like that, but my jaw dropped. I had never seen that. That's how much television has changed in 20 fucking years. That's why television's almost done. In fucking 3 months, you want to buy Game of Thrones, you don't have to pay cable no more. You just buy Game of Thrones, correct?
Yeah, and then there's also, like, have you seen that Netflix show, Orange is the New Black? I started watching that. You can get away with wild shit on TV now as long as it's not on TV. It's like you have to do it through this weird back door. So creative shows are being made, like House of Cards and Orange is the New Black. You can do those on Netflix now. And it's way freer than anything's ever been before. And you could probably have like a Red Fox type show on Netflix. Like it could actually probably work. But on regular network television, it's just... It's too hard. It's too censored. It's too chopped up. There's too many people you're trying to serve. They're trying to serve the middle of the middle of America. That's what they want. They don't want anything that deviates, nothing that's controversial, nothing that's scary, nothing that's going to cost them advertiser dollars, especially today, because today if anybody says anything controversial, everybody wants to pull ads. You know, that's the first thing. People want to boycott and pull ads. Because people have you have the ability to impact things. And right now, advertisers and television networks haven't figured out how to fucking just chill out and just let everybody go crazy and scream, and just it'll die down. Some new shit will happen. Like, stick to your guns. If you think a show is good, like, put it on. If you think it's offensive but good and it explains itself well, put it on. But they don't have the balls. They're scared. Everyone's just trying to keep their job. Executives get fired left and right. Any one fuck up they make, wah, they're out the door.
So Orange is the New Black. Is that on TV also?
It's on Netflix. Only
so
on Netflix.
It just airs on Netflix.
Mm-hmm. And now, you know, Vimeo, which is just like an online service, they do that documentary, The Culture High. You can pay for that. You can pay for a lot of movies and stuff like that. And they work with independent film directors. They have a new show called High Maintenance. And it's like their own homegrown show. So like different like online outlets are taking chances and creating cool new shows. So it's like that's what's going to happen. It's like networks fucked it up so bad or watered it down so much that the only other options are to do that.
Well, I mean, it's kind of crazy. I talk to Joey a lot about specials on like TV, and I always think they've been really bad.
Oh, tell him what you told me.
Yeah, I tell every special I call him, and like if I've seen somebody and they've been good, and then the special stinks, it, like upsets me. And then I watched yours that just came out, and I called him, and I said, I don't think it's Comedy Central's fault. I think a lot of the comedians just aren't ready to do it, because it's the same people doing it.
Well, they give you an option. You could do it at, like, 10 o'clock, and it'll be censored, or you do it at midnight, and it's just buck wild.
But it's not even the censored that's
You can say cunt. I said cunty.
But it's not even the words. It's just the quality of the comedy.
I'm very excited about that.
It's just not fun. Like, a lot of the specials just haven't been funny recently.
Well, we thought it was the editing. For a long time, we discussed editing, maybe. Maybe when you do...
There's a lot of issues. Editing. First of all, there's a big issue with doing a special scary. You know, a lot of times there's funny people, and they do a special, and the special's not that funny because they're nervous. You know, like, Hicks' special, Relentless, not that funny. You know, that was the one he did in London. It was one take theater. No. Those are stiff. It's hard to relax and do, like, a regular show. But what I always wind up doing is doing, like, two shows. The first one kind of sucks, and the second one's usually funny. The first one, you get it out of your system, and the second one, you can use. And that becomes a special.
No, yeah, I mean, it's just crazy how bad they've been. And I don't know, it's just, we were talking about the Gerard Carmichael one. I the first time I saw it, I thought it was pretty good. But then the more and more I hear about it, just he was too young. And
well, you know, my first one sucks a dick. Go back and watch my first one. It's fucking terrible. You know, when you go back and look at your first stuff that you ever do, hopefully you keep getting better. But the other thing was they want to do things when they film a special that are bad for comedy. They want to keep the lights on. That's one thing they always want to do. They want to make the room really bright. It makes people real self-conscious and aware. They don't want it to be like a dark club for whatever fucking reason. And I had a fight for that. So in Denver, like when you watch that special, that's a club. I mean, there's very little difference between that show and a show without the cameras. It's exactly the same way. It's where it's lit up. Everything is the same. But that's from, you know, I've been doing this for 26 years. I knew the right thing, the right way to change it, for me at least. Like, I don't want doing them in theaters anymore. Because I think when you're doing it in a theater, yeah, it looks big. There's all these people. There's a balcony and all that bullshit. But the reality is, like, you're watching it at home on a couch, you know. And, like, in your living room is very intimate. You don't feel connected to some theater. But if you're watching it on a couch and the guy's in like a little club and there's only a couple hundred people there, you feel like you're there.
Well, I'm sure he's a nice guy, but the last Kevin Hart one that came out with the fire, I thought it was just ridiculous. I mean,
well, you're white.
That's true.
You know, there's always that.
I'm very white. That is true.
I didn't see it. He's a funny dude, though. Fucking hilarious. It's hard to... Also, he's doing a million movies a year. That's one thing. Dude's getting paid. He's just getting paid. So it's hard to have the time to write jokes. I mean, that dude is probably, he's probably got to like negotiate his way around money in his house. He's probably just got stacks of it everywhere. I try to get to his bathroom, get away from this money. It's fucking everywhere. He opens a door, it flies out like birds. It's probably hard to write jokes, you know? He's probably busy as fuck.
Or the workout material.
Yeah, that too.
He can't go into anywhere without 6,000 people showing up. Mm. So it's like you go into a coffee shop and work material hidden. You know?
You can still do it. You just got to do it.
He's shooting movies.
Chris Rock always did it, even in his prime. He would show up at the Comedy Store in the middle of the show, just show up and do a set. You can do it. Just you got to be dedicated to doing that. And you also got to be willing to eat dick publicly. You know, if you want to come up with new material, you got to be willing to eat dick. You got to take those chances.
My beautiful people, any questions real quick? We got a couple minutes here before we get the fuck out of here. You guys could go, get high, do what it is that you do before Thanksgiving. Tonight, like I said, tonight's a good night. Tonight's a good night to get fucked up. Just don't get fucking hammered. Take an Uber, you know, do what the fuck you gotta do. Drink responsibly is what I'm trying to fucking tell you, okay?
Can I just say I'm so happy you do podcasts?
Why is that?
Because you're one of my favorite people ever. And like you would only do other people's podcasts for like a long time. When you started doing podcasts, I got so happy. I've never met a better storyteller in my life. You're the best storyteller I've ever met.
Oh my God.
By far.
And you know what happens, guys? Like, I got all this shit. When that kid came up to me last Saturday and said that to me last Thursday, that just threw me off.
About sleeping on the spaceship with the Coke rocket?
Yeah, because he wasn't lying. Did I remember that story? I think about it every 6 days to keep me in line. You know what I'm saying? When I'm on the 405 getting mad because there's traffic, this ain't this fucking bad, okay? At least I'm headed home. There's a warm meal. This was a couple nights, guys. I would just sleep under this rocket ship and get high, you know, and this particular bag of Coke, he saw me at 1 p.m, and the bag was filled. And when I saw him at 4, he asked to buy some, and I go, all I have is this. And he looked at me like, you cannot be fucking serious. You did all that Coke. And that's the last time I saw him. Frankie, that's the last time I saw him. And when my friend told me he was coming Thursday night, they were driving from Jersey, he said, Frankie's coming. And that's the first thing I thought of. Oh, my God. I wonder if he remembers how embarrassing that moment was. That he saw this bag of Coke at 1 o'clock. And at 4 in the morning, it was just nothing in the bag. And I did the joke. I had a great night. We were talking outside. And all of a sudden, right before I got in the cab, he pulled me aside. And that's what he said to me. So I thought of all those times. And sometimes me hearing that from somebody opens doors. And I start thinking. But I've been thinking about the Nelson thing for a while. That's classic, because that's got to be on a TV show or something. Man. This guy was the neighborhood. He just answered your questions. No matter what sex. Yeah, I mean, he wasn't really a pervert, guys. There was never...
Oh, yes, he was.
He didn't.
I want to be the guy who steps up and defines this guy.
The girl he was fucking, I think towards the end one night, he opened up the curtains. He charged us $5. Instead of two. Because he would charge us $2 just for audio. Right? We would just get to listen. And then one night, he turned the light outside, like the floodlight. In those days, you had like a floodlight, those big lights. He turned that off, and he let us look at her while he was fucking her. She was fucking hideous. She was fucking hideous. And she used to, you know, that's what he used to always talk about, giving him milk. And I would just sit there. I didn't know. You know, there was another situation. We had an eighth grade teacher, and he was the mayor of Weehawken, and he had an assistant that was took care of his dirty work. So one time, this guy coached us in the eighth grade, and he took us to like a Nick Sixer game. And on the way back, he kept telling us, listen, if you guys have a winning season, I'm going to get all 3 years laid. We're 13. We're in the eighth grade. We got basketballs between our thighs because we're bringing them to the garden because Julius Erving might sign them. The last thing on our mind was getting laid. And I'll never forget him going, I'm going to get you laid. I'm going to get you dick sucked. And like I was in the back seat, like my friend in the front, he was mortified. This is December of 78 or something. Now it's the summer of 79. We just get out of school. We're ready to go to high school. Everything's beautiful. Turk Jordan pulls up with the Cadillac. He gets out of the car, leather jacket. Guys, come over here. I brought you something. He opens up the car door, and out walks this 60-year-old hag with fucking fake huge tits. I'll never forget. Her feet were just fucked up. Like it looked like Mel Gibson in Payback. Remember they were hitting him with a hammer? I remember like looking at her and looking at her feet like, ooh, like all of us, right? He's like, come here, guys. Say hello to Mildred. And we're like, hi, Mildred.
Mildred?
Yeah. And we're like, hi, Mildred. And he's like, Remember I told you guys if you had a winning season, I was going to get your dick sucked? And we're like, yeah, we thought that was a joke. Like, we're like, and he's like, well, get in the back. Who wants to fuck Mildred first? And we're all sitting there like, I got to go home.
No. Oh, Mildred. Did they stop using that name?
Huh?
They stopped using that name like in the 80s.
That's like this.
There's no Mildreds.
Last time I met that lady, I never want to hear Mildred again. I can't. And everybody left. Like, well, he's like, who's going to fuck her first? Come on. She'll suck your dick. And we're like, nah. Nah, we got to go home. We're going to a barbecue and shit. Everybody started walking back. It was like, you motherfuckers.
Oh, Mildred.
It's different. Those guys weren't perverts. They weren't trying to suck your dick. They were trying to get your dick sucked. Like, they were helping you out. He didn't want to charge us no money or nothing.
He's a good guy.
Hey, he wasn't a bad guy. I mean, who does that for kids now?
They can't. You get sued. They put you on a list.
Nobody helps kids out like that no more.
They didn't even have, like, a sex offender registry back then. They didn't have an app where you could find all the perverts in your neighborhood. You know, you could just, like, find perverts around you, knock on their door.
Oh, my God. I don't know how the fuck I grew up. I'm like a fucking Tarzan. I was raised by apes.
It's pretty funny.
And it's fucking real. And he knows these people in Jersey. If you close your eyes, you've bumped into this guy. Have a leather jacket, the sideburns, the chain. He's like, come over here, guys. Circle around. Who wants to fuck her first? What? We're playing basketball. She wasn't even making eye contact. She was drunk on something. She was on Cosby pills. And we're like,
oh, no.
I love you guys. Stay black.
Thank you.
Happy Thanksgiving.